I am Martha Sears Jeanette, born in 1894, the third child of a family of 7 girls and 2 boys. We had a lovely farm right below our beloved Sear Hill and next to St. Mary's College. My father was Theophil Sear, born on the same farm, only right on the banks of the St. John River. His father was Francis Kirk Sear, a descendant of Pierre Sear, born in 1644 in France. Francis married Marguerite Sear, also of the same family. They were born in Sainte-Anne, New Brunswick. My mother was Alice Michaud, born in Sear Plantation near Le Ruisseau des Écureux. Her father was Eusebe Michaud from Saint-André-de-Kamouraska, province of Quebec. Her mother was Elizabeth Ann Farrell, whose father came from Ireland. Our first education was at our mother's knees, and also following the examples of our lovely grandparents. We were taught to love God, respect authority, first hands, and to love and help our neighbors. I was only 5 years old when I started school at the old convent, then called. This is situated where the brick house is on a hill facing Bridge Street. It was called Joe Martin's home. The Good Shepherd sisters staffed the convent, which was a boarding school. We lived near the town. We were quarter boarders, and we rode in winter with our dad and took the neighbor's children along with us. In summer, we walked. We had a snack at 4 o'clock. The half boarders, then called, had dinner at the convent, and the boarders were the residents, the students who lived with the sisters. We always brought our own lunch. The classroom was very large. We were heated with a pot-bellied stove. It was filled with a nice hardwood, which made us feel that we were on an outing or a picnic, because we used to warm our lunch, which consisted of pancakes spread with croutons, scrapples in English. And if it was very cold, we would warm them on the stove lid. We also would get warm near the stove. But we always were supervised by a sister. Later on, one of the older residents, the boarders, would help us. We would warm our milk, because the container that we brought our lunch in was a nice dinner box. The cover was made like a pan, so we used it for our milk. The desk we sat at was one very long table with a slanting top and drawers. We used to bring crab apples, candy, and so forth. Once, my little bag of fruits fell on the floor, and I was punished because I had brought that in the class and not eaten at mealtime. After a few years, the old convent was not large enough, so a new one was built near the church. It is the same building where the sisters live now. Having had a sound religious education at home, especially by Grand-Mère Sear, who was an invalid, we really felt when we went to school that we had had a start at the house. My mother was married in 1890, and she nursed Mimir Sear until the latter died in 1909. I can still hear Mimir say to my mother, "Alice, don't give me any dinner this noon. You have to feed the younger children. All I want is a small piece of cheese. I'll eat later after school." But we never let her go without dinner. My mother would put the baby behind my grandmother in bed, and she would give my mamere her dinner. We were taught each in turn to feed her, to help her. Mamere had a beautiful voice. She sang lovely ballads, also told us so many nice stories about fairies, giants. So when we started going to school, we had a beginning. We could read, we could write. Thanks to our grandmother Michaud, who was Irish, a Farrell, we could speak quite good English. One part of the studies which really helped us was a supervised hour from about 4:30 to 5:40. We were two groups, the young and the older girls, each in a separate room. We could ask the supervisor how to do our work. I only wish I could explain to the students of the next decade what school meant to us in the 1900s. Our sisters at the convent were expertise in French, English, courtesy, and gracefulness. They were our friends, and to this day, I feel that those were the happy years. We had concerts, plays, we had get-togethers with the parents, the friends, other relatives who used to come and visit. Sister Marianne, the superior, excelled in all kinds of training. Her diction, enunciation, her gracefulness were to be remembered. She always would come in and say, "Ladies should be seen and not heard. Girls, please listen carefully and remember what I have to say, and you will always, in the years to come, remember what I taught you in the 1900s. This is May 1972. Last night, two of my teenage neighbors, young ladies who often come to me to borrow crayons and so forth, hollered, "Mrs. Jeanette, come see the big star." Last month, this star was so near the moon, so much that some girls thought it was a flight of a plane. But we went out and we looked at it for a while. I told them it must be a planet. The next morning on today's show, there was an announcement that the planet Venus was so near the moon that some people had even called in to find out. So I told these girls, and I also told them that they should ask their sister if they could some night study it like we used to do. When we had the new Van Buren convent, we used to go up in the belfry, and that is where we learned about the stars. We used to watch the Milky Way at night, and even after I went to bed, I remember that I could see the Milky Way in my dreams. Our nature study courses were given in the open air. We used to bring our lunch, go up on the picnic ground, which now is where the state picnic grounds are. This is on the Caribou Road. We would collect material, especially cocoons, and bring them back to the school and explain it in class. Once we were talking about fish, so at night my father brought me fishing out back of the farm, and I caught a very small pink speckled trout. I left it out in the sun, and the next day I cleaned it. We left it to dry a few hours more. Then Dad stuffed it with cotton batting, and we put a bone that we had picked out from somebody's corset. It was just like a stuffed one. This we studied. It was very, very encouraging because it never dried up enough to break. So we were asked at different times to bring other things, like feathers from a partridge. So that is how we started learning about different kinds of studies. Another time, we needed musical instruments. I came home and told Dad if we could make a violin from a shingle. So Dad started cutting it. We used wires that had been used for to snare and catch rabbits. We took an old fine comb. Dad cut it to make the bridge of the violin. Then we went in the barn. We took horse hair from one of the horses, and my grandfather made a bow. He used rosin on the horse hair, and I had a fiddle that gave good sound. That, with a couple of friends playing the jew's harp on a comb covered with tissue paper, was our orchestra for a while. We were very ingenious when it came to making and inventing things then. I graduated in 1911 at the academy, which was the Good Shepherd Convent. I took commercial courses. Our shorthand and typing was not on the school curriculum. We had to pay for these extra courses and also had these classes after school time. Dad would sell a few cords of wood or a calf to the convent in order to pay for these extra courses. And also, we took piano lessons, chorography, and so forth. I would like to tell you about maple sugar time on a farm. Early in the spring, Grand-Père Cyr would holler, "Birds, come in my room. We have to get out the red flannels, and we have to organize to go and get some bark to make containers for our maple candy. Maple sugar time is near." Grand-Père Michaud had already made some lovely small containers with some nice wood that he had carved himself, some in the shape of hearts, others in the shape of a diamond. These were really where we kept our secret keepsakes after we had eaten the maple sugar. During the winter, we had gathered small pails, cans, and so forth. These we are all attached a wire to. These were used to hang on to the maple trees. Our farm was a few miles from town. We usually went on a couple of weekends to organize the camp. This was to us at the time worth a trip to a real resort. We had a camp, we would stay overnight and bring different kinds of food that my father would cook. We'd sleep there, and then the next morning we would ride with Dad or a hired help in one of the homemade sleighs, which was about a ride of a quarter mile up to where the sugar camp was. We used to have two brothers that came with us, but we three older girls, Marie, Cécile, and myself, were always the leader. Later on, Anne came, but we felt that these were the best years of our lives, because we helped to gather the sap we called l'eau d'érable. Our cans were filled up. We used to go and empty them in the very large chaudron, we used to call. After a few days, my grandfather would say, "The sap is not running very much. You had better go back to town." We would come back for Mass on Sunday. But Sunday afternoon, we were all dressed up to go back to the camp. It was odd how we collected the sap. My grandfather would tap the maples, he called it. That was, he bored a hole, put the container under this hole. Usually, it was wired to a nail.
then we would sit out, we would watch those fires, and then as soon as somebody hollered, "Your pail is full," we would run over. And then everybody came back to see how to start making this wonderful cereal. When we were resting, my grandfather would say, "Let's sing a little song." And he would start in his deep bass, "Petits enfants, qui jouez dans la prairie, jouez chanter au doux parfum des fleurs, profitez bien du printemps de la vie. Trop tôt et là, vous verserez des fleurs." Then he would holler, "A la cabane à sucre, everybody, the sap is running today, and my big chaudron was full of nice maple syrup." We would take each a small bowl filled with homemade bread, and the very first syrup was poured on this. At the time, we had each a small casseau de course. We had maple water in that. So we would eat our bread in the new maple syrup and drink some maple water. Then we would romp around. What fun we used to have there. We would all come back very tired, and then my grandfather would say, "Clear away from the chaudron, because this candy may run over. This is going to be la tire d'érable, the best one I ever made." And last procedure of making maple sugar was to us the expert part of the world. Grandpapa had the older ones take over. Each had a separate pitcher or small container they used to pour the candy, or what we call sucre d'érable, from the big chaudron into the nice diamond-shaped boxes or the little hard box. But you had to be very careful not to spill any, and to put just enough in the container, no more. Some of the experts in the group had already done the pouring through the red flannels at first, so they were the chosen ones. But we always worked in teams, and no one felt that his or her job was not the choicest one. To top it all, and before we left the camp, we had to take a jug of the best syrup, warm it again if it had got cold, and then break each an egg in it. I can still taste les œufs dans le sirop d'érable. One could speak all day on all these procedures and how to explain how to make maple goodies like our grandfathers made. If the season was late, some of us had already been chosen by Grand-Mère Cire to pick 7 pounds of wood to make the spring tonics with. Of course, this was something we really loved, and I can still taste cherry, also wild cherry bark, de la merise. We would also check on the hazelnut branches if the buds were out, as my dad always was the first in with flowers for the graduates' scrapbook. This was called un herbier, made of dried flowers with the history and the name of whatever flower they had in their scrapbook. Also, they wrote how these were grown. One special flower was les petits cochons de plaine. This grew in the swampy ground, and a legend had it that some Indians who had not had any water to drink for some time had been kept alive by drinking water they had found in these little pigs from the plains. I was married in 1926 to an American, Louis Argenette, who lived in Quebec City.
I have two lovely daughters, and their husbands are like my sons too. I have a grandson and a granddaughter. Mother died in 1960. She was 92 years old. She was as keen-minded at the last minute as I hope I will be too. We are still six girls, Mary Powers, Anne Denzil, and myself, Martha Jeanette. Three nuns, Cecile of Tonga, Bernadette of Fiji, and Marguerite of Hull, PQ. Two brothers, Martin of Unionville, Connecticut, and George of Van Buren. We are all trying to follow in our parents' footsteps. Our dad had died in 1916. We all hope that we can bring up our own families as well as our mother did with us. I would love to mention that one of my daughters, Paulette, had the privilege to be on the first bookmobile for Northern Maine. She had only 1 year of college, but she was asked by Mrs. Tubbs to try and help to organize in her hometown. She worked 2 years, the last one under Miss Hazelton, and I feel that these years were to her like having always been a librarian. She went to try and be a missionary, but after another 2 years, she came back to college. She had a bachelor's degree from Central Missouri State College because her brother-in-law was stationed there, and my daughter Teresa took Paulette with them. Then she had a master's in library science. She, at the time, was always sponsored by her sister, Teresa, and the wonderful husband, David McGrath, a member of the Air Force. At Florida State College, Paulette met her husband, who was also getting a master's in library science. After a year, when Paulette graduated, John also had a position at Franklin Library in Crossburg, Maryland, where they were married. A year after, John was offered a fellowship for a PhD. They went back to Florida State. John is now Dr. John S. Goodell of Emporia State College in Kansas, and Paulette worked to have a master's in education. She is helping John at this time to organize courses for the library there. My other son-in-law, Captain David McGrath, was given a couple of weeks ago a meritorious service medal during his retirement ceremony at McClellan Air Force Base in California. He is a 20-year veteran and holds a master navigator rating. They have a home in Rancho Cordova, California. The members left of our family are all dedicated to projects of some kind and are all very happy doing whatever work is mapped out for them.